Sandra Witt, who works with the California Endowment here. It's also based in Oakland. She's been the director of the Healthy Communities North component of TCE since 2011. She also used to work at Alameda County and has been a leader and a supporter of HIA for many years. So thank you, Sandra.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for being here. I am excited to present to you and share with you what the California Endowment's Building Healthy Communities Initiative is about and the role of HIAs in that initiative. I have nothing to no relationship to disclose. So the Building Healthy Communities Initiative is a 10-year, billion-dollar, place-based initiative that really focuses in on 14 places in California. And the goal of this is to create places where children are healthy, safe, and ready to learn. And these, as we know and we've heard, good health outcomes are not distributed equally across our state or in our country. And these 14 communities were selected because they had poor health outcomes. And in addition to that, also had a lot of great work happening on the ground, people that were really invested in working towards building their communities. And this initiative is really about policy and systems change. So it started off with a planning process, a long planning process. Over 22,000 folks in the 14 places participated in really prioritizing what they wanted to work on in their community. What were some of the key things that they thought were really, really important? And those really focused in the four priority areas were number four, residents live in communities with health promoting land use, transportation and community development, that they be safe communities, number five, that there be jobs and opportunities for economic development, and that there also be, taking advantage of the Affordable Care Act, that there be opportunities to expand health coverage and health home for everybody. And that doing this work really required working with and changing some institutional practices within the health and human services systems, schools, and then around the physical, social, and economic environment. So how we think that this change happens and what we're doing our grant making towards is really there's five core strands to this work. One is really building what we're calling building resident power, really having communities that are most impacted by these poor health outcomes participate in the process and identify what the solution is. So resident power building is a big core piece of this work. Along that line is also youth development, leadership, and organizing. So really a focus on youth and bringing young people into this conversation. A third area is what we're calling collaborative efficacy, and really what that is silo busting, breaking down the silos that exist in how we do our work from a government perspective, as well as building new relationships with community-based organizations, nonprofits, and organizing groups, leveraging partnerships, and this is sort of thinking clearly the endowment's investment is not going to change the nature of the situation, but it's really about being strategic and looking at other opportunities for government investment and private investment to improve and work along with us towards to address the priorities that the communities have already identified. And then last but not least is really changing the narrative. And what we mean by that is really health is more than what just happens in a doctor's office. And that really everything, place where we live, really matters. And we really want to be part of changing the narrative around what creates healthy communities and the fact that the people most impacted need to be engaged in this work. So that's sort of how we think change happens. And so HIAs, I think, are really a core tool, a core process, a core methodology of how we can move in this direction. The core principles of HIAs that Lily shared earlier are really align perfectly, I think, with what we're trying to do in building healthy communities. Health equity considerations in all decision making, most impacted communities engage in the process, and that through that engagement really build leadership and advocacy skills around these issues. That it's an opportunity, a great opportunity. It forces you to really work across silos and break down some of the divisions between different sectors, creates an opportunity to really bring in perhaps usual and not so usual suspects into thinking and partners into thinking about how to leverage resources better, and then helps change the narrative. So there are a number of examples of HIAs. I think the endowment started supporting HIAs over about 7 years ago, and so I won't go through all of these, but just to say that most of them have actually been around the built environment. That is, you know, like I think the field, a lot of HIAs are really around the built environment, and many of these are things that HIP has really been engaged with helping move forward. So I'm just going to give a quick example of three, one that's more around the built environment, one that's transportation, and one that's around school discipline policies. So the University of Sanford, and so this is about South LA, which is one of our partnership sites. So the USC specific plan is a 20-year, billion-dollar expansion project that will increase student housing, establish a multi-use retail complex, and new academic facilities in one of their campuses on in the South LA campus. And over the last 2 years, the United Neighbors in Defense Against Displacement, a broad-based coalition, have been really working on advocating and organizing to make sure that this expansion project really meets the benefit, really meets the needs and benefits not only the academic institution but also the neighbors in that community. And an HIA was conducted to look at the impacts of that. And the results of that HIA were then used to prioritize the campaigns and the advocacy and the communications that this broad-based coalition really used to advocate. And I think this is an important point throughout these presentations, is that there was really a broad-based group of 25 organizations that came together, really multi-sector groups that came together, healthcare providers, public health department, faith-based, youth-serving organizations, to work on this and to really advocate together. And right now, there's, I think, a decision is going to be made in November, but right now the local council districts have really urged and really the ask and the push really is to have USC contribute up to $20 million for affordable housing, as well as local hire and some small business supports. And so there's been a real effort to really organize and move that work forward. Oakland Bus Rapid Transit HIA, this is a project that will be connecting several cities in the East Bay. An HIA was done on one particular section in Oakland on this, and the focus was really about the dedicated bus lanes that are part of this rapid bus transit. And here again, a coalition of over 30 organizations really worked together to use the results of the HIA in advocacy. And this passed unanimously just, I think, 2 months ago with the City of Oakland that they would actually go for having a dedicated center lane just for buses in this process. So public health data and results were used in that. And then another example has been through the planning process that I mentioned, we really heard from our communities a real, real concern that young men, particularly boys of color, were being suspended and expelled from school at a much, much higher rate than anybody else. So real concerns around that really came from our communities that have been working on this issue. We asked HIP to do an HIA on school discipline policy, you know, really doing an analysis of zero tolerance policies, restorative justice, and positive behavioral intervention supports. And that information has also been used to advocate with school districts and as well to help influence some of the recent bills that have passed, along with a lot of other information and a lot of organizing, other bills that have just recently passed in the state of California to address this issue. So those are just some examples. I think the successes, and I think you're probably hearing a theme in some of these presentations, has really been this ability, the HIA as a tool and a process and a methodology to engage multiple sectors, groups that have been living next to each other and not necessarily work together around these issues. Clearly encourages cross-sector collaboration. There's been some concrete improvements and many examples of really elevating health in policy decision making and use for advocacy. I think some of the challenges, and some of this has been mentioned in particular Tammy's presentation, has really been that community engagement and outreach takes time. That sometimes the planning process and the decision-making timelines are clear, and sometimes they're really not that clear at all. And so really understanding when decisions are going to be made and when it's really important to show up, I think, is a big piece of this. I think the other thing, too, is that, you know, data is not the only reason. As Tammy mentioned, data is not the only reason that decisions get made. There's lots of other context. And so I think that understanding that in this process is a big piece and has been challenging as well. Hard to keep a sustained interest, not because people aren't interested, but just because there's so much that people are doing, especially in our most impacted communities. So really thinking about that. And often, you know, really just lifting up from the get-go power dynamics, because, you know, what we found through all of these is that power dynamics really matter and come into play. And so really from the get-go thinking about, you know, who's got the power to do what kind of data is really important. I think the piece that I didn't, let me just go back to challenges for a minute. I also think that in addition to not winning decisions based on data all the time, it's also about really valuing lived experience. And I think sometimes there's this tension between, you know, how much do you value the lived experience data that's informing an HIA and some of the other more secondary data and modeling analysis. So I think that's an issue, and that also influences some of the power dynamics that come into play. And I know I have to wrap it up. So I think, so in terms of sustainability and what the future holds, I think that for us it's really trying to think about how to be more proactive as opposed to just reactive around building capacity and awareness of HIA among a variety of factors, training, so the training that HIP is doing I think is a real key piece of this. Really the ability to connect practitioners, which, you know, professional sort of practitioners that do this work with local communities in a way that's really respectful and really adds value in terms of the work. And so that really requires an understanding around some of the power dynamics in our communities, encouraging cross-sectoral collaboration. And then last but not least, really sort of building the field, both the philanthropic field, which has grown substantially to fund HIAs across the country. So Robert Wood Johnson, Blue Shield of Minnesota, Kaiser Permanente, other foundations have really taken this on. I also think that some sectors like CDC and HUD are also really looking at the results of these and trying to think about how to incorporate this in the work that they do. Finally, ultimately, building healthy communities is really about changing the political, social, economic context of that have created these horrible health inequities that we see. And so that means that it really, fighting for health equity really means fighting for social justice, demands an equitable distribution of collective goods, institutional resources, and life course opportunities. And as NACHO calls out, calls for democracy, the empowerment of all social members, along with democratic and transparent structures to forward social goals. And we think that HIAs and incorporating health in decision making is one way to get us there. Thank you.
Thank you, Sandra. So we've got about 25 minutes for questions. I think it's hard to see the people sitting behind the podium, so I think what I'll do, if this mic works, is just hand it to people who have questions. So why don't we get started? Are there any questions for any of the speakers? Yes.
Who's it for? Our last speaker. Sandra, I'm Tony DeLucia. I'm a member of CHPPD in the environment section, and I guess HIAs are just really in the crosshairs for where we can move a lot of things forward. But you mentioned power structure, and it seems to me that we're in California where the power structure is set one way. How do we look at that map showing where HIAs are not accepted and used as much and find the kind of receptive power structure, the good old boys that would fight you tooth and nail to allow women and communities of color, other communities reaching for power to be as involved in especially built environment issues where we're thinking in terms of schools and clinics and these kinds of resources.
Yeah, I think that's a fabulous question. And even in California, there's variations, right?
So I think that's a really good question. I think part of this, at least, and this comes from some of the experience in Alameda County, even though it's a different political structure, is starting with examples and starting small around how to incorporate health. I mean, we do find that thinking about health, you know, our children's health, I mean, there are ways to think about accessing what people really care about and what they really value about. Not to say that this is it's an easy venture, so I don't want to at all say that it's easy. I think focusing on health for all has really been one of those places that helps build that. I think it gets a little trickier when you're talking about health equity, in that conversation. And I don't know if we want to go into those dynamics in this conversation. But I really think it's trying to find that common ground, sort of to find what a core value that people really care about will move forward.
I wonder, David, do you have anything? Being from a different part of the country. You can stand up there.
I think that one of the real challenges that I think we're trying to fix is how to get the same message to very different people. I mean, one of the real tough things, and actually even writing up the HIA that we're doing right now, is how much do we talk about the racial disparities? I mean, we care about it tremendously. It's huge, but there's a whole bunch of good old boys out there who then almost disqualify this as being something that they'd be willing to talk about. So there's, it's really it's a tough question. You have to kind of craft things differently and kind of cobble together groups of people, and different people care about different things, and you have to find a way to get the message to the people who care about it. You can't just complain about it. You have to figure out something to get to them.
Others? Yes,
Pat.
David,
one
to your up there. So actually, a question and then maybe an observation. The question is, you move the health to HIA. I wonder if you could sort of show us how you went from gathering data, what kind of data you were able to use to demonstrate a reducing incarceration, for example, made communities safer. Just to kind of give us, some sense of that. And the observation that I'm very struck that community-based participatory research, which is an approach to engaging community with research, not necessarily only with the health lens, has been very similar for both practices and a focus on action as a result of the research. So it just kind of struck me.
We probably spent more time figuring out the questions to ask than we did on actually getting the questions answered. I mean, I think the hardest part of the process is figuring out what data do we want. In one sense, we were lucky in that there was this little program, this $1 million program in the state that actually our organization won about 6 years ago, kind of got written into the law with a requirement that the University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute had to study the results. So in one sense, it was all there. It was all this little miniature thing of saying, this is what happened in these six counties with these programs. So in one sense, all we had to do was say, well, what would that look like if it was bigger? So that would be kind of one way to go about it. But really the hardest part was figuring out which questions we wanted to answer and how we wanted to look. There's a lot of data about criminal justice and about alternatives to incarceration stuff out there, but not a lot that's kind of put together in such a way that you can answer these questions, which is what I think these guys help us to do a lot.
And I'll just be really specific about that. Like, one thing we did was looking in the literature for estimates of recidivism among folks that are incarcerated versus folks that go through problem-solving courts. And then we took those two estimates, right, that you find, and then we applied them to the number of people that would go through the $75 million model, and you just subtract.
Yeah.
And that's how we came up with the number.
I was just going to say, one other real quick thing that we kind of found out, that you also, there's some questions you just can't answer because there's no data for it, so you drop the question. So one of the things, amazingly, is that the alternative programs, like the mental health courts and the drug courts, do a terrible job of tracking how well people actually do in recovery. Like, they do a real good job of tracking their recidivism rate, but they do a terrible job of actually tracking their health. So we kind of had to just drop that as a question, even though it's the thing we probably cared about the most, but it's like, there's just no good data out there.
I'm going to go with you, and then I'm going to go with back.
Yeah, also follow up question for David. What research did you have on violence that was occurring in Wisconsin prisons and negative health outcomes for
we didn't estimate this reduction in injuries that would occur to people if they didn't go to prison. I think that's a good question, but we didn't look.
There's some stuff, but we didn't go really in depth into the health issues and the violence issues and injury issues within the prison system. That would be another whole thing. This was kind of just pulling out the difference between going and not going, as opposed to.
Ma'am. Hi, Margie Woodry from the Public Health Foundation, Washington, D.C. So the theme of my question is quality of purpose.
Okay.
And right. And I think every single one of the presentations, I heard this thread that was either having to do with the tools that you use to do, in your case, maybe the root cause analysis piece on, so what's causing people to come back to prison, or it could have to do with how it comes to a joint appreciation for where's the shared mission from these very diverse groups of stakeholders, and how can they, I feel like there's effort throughout this, all kinds of opportunities for the use of quality improvement tools, methods, approaches. And so the question I have is, for any of you that feel like answering it, I'll ask too, have you deliberately seen this being incorporated, or you have experience with it sort of serendipitously happening, and then particularly for HIV, is this a part of the training that you're doing?
You know what would help? I think, can you define when you say quality improvement tools? For folks in the room, like what, in one sentence, what you mean?
So I'm talking about the use of data analytical or process improvement tools that are that have been borrowed in most cases from outside industries, which are now a core part of public health presentation preparation and readiness, and are being used in general to improve health departments.
You may be disappointed in our answer.
That's okay. I don't know where we are.
I think I can speak for at least for Human Impact Partners, and I think for everyone on the panel, that is definitely not something that we, the idea of sort of borrowing tools from these other sectors that are going through QR processes, I think what we do in our agency for sort of the evaluation piece.
Yeah, well, I think I'm coming back to sort of like quality improvement for what, and I think that we have to come back to our original mission of getting health considered in the debate and engaging stakeholders. And so there's so many different ways and tools of improving that quality for those purposes. And so that's so I'm having a hard time, understanding how to answer the question because that's the way I'm thinking. So I think that we are continually trying to improve our processes and helping others figure out how to apply the right methods for their assessments, apply the right methods for engaging stakeholders. We've heard it's really important to start working with communities early. So it's hard to actually come up with a real set of a list of things that can be done because it's all about the learning process. You start a process and you realize, oh, I needed to actually engage this group or that group, or start earlier and have them weigh in on the scope and what we're looking at and how to be strategic with the information that we want to get out of this instead of being answering questions. So it's difficult. Yeah. Am I help at all?
I think it's the start of a report conversation.
Yeah.
And I don't have an answer to your question, but I'm assuming you mean what a recommendation that impacts the DQI process? I think maybe we can talk offline because ASTRA does have ASTRA and HR are very involved in the accreditation process. I'm a little bit removed from it, but if you have a way for me to connect our HIA project with our accreditation piece, I'd love to kind of hear your thoughts. I'm not exactly sure what you're asking, but
yep.
I'd love to talk about it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So are there other questions?
Yes.
Let me just get someone who hasn't had a chance to ask it. Yes, ma'am.
I wonder if you could, it came up a couple times, but I wonder if you could address more explicitly where leadership that's not in-house needs to come from in order to make the health
answered your question.
I mean, I think what I want is NGA and other groups to...
Absolutely, and we have very close ties with NGA and the Salad, and we are absolutely engaging them in that as well, and we'll be bringing them to the table with these other NGOs, along with the Surgeon General, who obviously is spearheading the National Prevention Strategy. So that's how we're kind of working across that state government's leadership level.
I mean, I think I'll just say it's incredibly hard, and a lot of the agencies don't want to do it. I mean, that's just the reality of it, right? So, like, especially agencies that control a lot of first-ring, like, transportation and are investing in their one particular way and sort of do what HIA does and require them to completely restructure how they fund their activities. So there's a lot of risk, and it's just, I think the way that we all approach it is by example. So just, do you want to do, you know, do an HIA,
I would say no, absolutely. Thanks for that. And I think that's, I think
think it's one of those lessons learned in this whole field that we got to start the conversation earlier. You have to build the relationships earlier before you actually get into a potential conflict situation or a difference of opinion. So I think that's one of the lessons learned. So I think that's a perfect example of trying to be more proactive as opposed to just reactive to something that's already in the books. I don't know that I would call that an HIA. But it is more about thinking about health in decision making, health in the work that other sectors do, and sort of building that relationship early on. And you know, just from personal experience, and this, I mean, I would even say, even with the work that Allegheny County did with the City of Oakland, I mean, it took with him and other folks on the ground advocating, it took a long time to sort of develop that relationship with the planning department, for example, to sort of start thinking about health in the work that they're doing. So I think that is more of what we're also trying to encourage in our initiative. Yeah, thanks.
I just want to add too, like, that was sort of the key of my like final point, is that we, even though some of these are not technically called an HIA because they're not informing a proposed decision and, you know, in predicting impacts on how is this decision going to change health, they are still offering health into the debate, and they should not be discounted because that's actually starting to get health considered much earlier and is a really important part of the process. Like, it's fine if we don't have to do HIAs because health is already being brought into it early, and we would be happy with that even though we feel kind of a little bit out of drug, but it still is really important. So that was sort of one of the things that I wanted people to take away from this. Be flexible. If your decision is not one that lends itself to health impact assessment, that's okay. There's still other things that you can do and other ways that you can try to push out.
I think we have time for one last question, if there's one. No? Well, thank you, everyone. If we can just get a big round for